Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things. The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
I wonder if things can be upside down in the cloud as well. I don't learn all kinds of new things.
Is there a right side up in the cloud?
I think that's based on how much medical marijuana you've had in the state of Illinois.
I don't know. The gravity's an actual presence in the cloud. I don't know if it exists there.
Yeah, well, it's just a line in a program, like when you're in the Matrix. You know, if you disbelieve the spoon, then gravity goes away.
Right. Well, what we found out today is that Sean and I have become obsolete.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I didn't think this was supposed to happen for a while. Now we just get to that part of Logan's Run where everybody dreads it. Just renew, yeah. And we're the ones going into carousel.
Go up to the light, yeah.
Yeah, we're the ones going into carousel at this point. If you haven't seen it, far too many references on this show to a 70s sci-fi flick, but it holds up so well, and it's done so well. Michael York, I believe, mm-hmm. as Logan. So
yeah, you remember him from the
he was D'Artagnan in Three Musketeers.
But he was also Basil something in the Austin Powers movies.
That was way later though. Yeah. But no, he played the role of D'Artagnan in the Three Musketeers movies that I grew up on, and I really don't acknowledge any of the ones that have come since, which is saying a lot for me because
really?
I am a Kiefer Sutherland fan, so you know.
You don't recognize Man in the Iron Mask?
That was so well done for the first 20 minutes that they really threw it all away. If there's one thing that I like when it comes to fictional heroes, whether it's in graphic novels or movies or in other situations, it's the old bitter versions of themselves. Those are always fascinating to me. And in Man in the Iron Mask, you get the sort of old, disillusioned, jaded, bitter version of the Three Musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had so much to go with there. And Jeremy Irons and Gerard Depardieu and just so many, the other guy.
The Russian.
Yes. Who's in Rounders.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
KGB.
Yes. They had so much going on there and so much talent. And then they started out so well for the first, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes, and then they just flushed it to a Disney movie. It was just, they had an opportunity and they lost it. But I think I know what they feel like now because we are now obsolete.
Yeah, well, what we found is that there's been links to new software. And usually we're the ones, and I got to be honest with you, I'm only partially obsolete because I'm the beta guy on some new software in the building right now. That seems to be going swimmingly.
Okay, then you're in a role that I've had previously, which is as the beta tester for software hardware.
Right.
So it's a huge jump from going from being the beta tester to being obsolete. Because essentially what you're told, if you're the beta tester, whether it's for software or children or new bicycles when you try it out, is that your knowledge and experience are so valuable that we're giving you access early to help us through the process of you know, smoothing out the bugs and the kinks and identifying them so that it's ready to go for everyone else.
And you also then need to help everybody else
smoothly
transition to this new software. Yeah, it's a fun role to have. However, with the new software vis-a-vis the podcast that came about, I want to say it was last week. Maybe it was a couple of weeks ago that discussion occurred. I could have swore you were there for that. It went on in the green room. The day that it was being implemented here in the studio, Josh was in here, Steve was in here.
Oh, that was that day.
Yeah, and we were in
that
the green room.
That was last Wednesday, I believe.
Okay, so that discussion was going. So why didn't you get, I mean, was it in place Tuesday? Because you were saying that stuff didn't work right Tuesday.
I'm going to let you in on a secret, and it's one that may ruin
John Malkovich, by the way.
Yes, John Malkovich. It's one that may ruin a long-time ploy of mine, and that is when I see most other people's lips moving, I stop paying attention.
Now my lips aren't moving, so I know you're paying attention.
I know. I was over there. I was just an expectant pause, waiting for you to come back. There are exceptions to that. You know, you're one of them. We've worked together and been friends for a very long time. But when most other people's lips start moving, I just pretty much shut it down and stop listening. So there you. I mean,
this is an important tip for anybody who wants to engage Sean in public in the future. As soon as you start talking, he's disinterested.
I've got a lot of things going on. I got a lot of, you know, basically my whole life is juggling chainsaws and cats. And
I've
the cats haven't been
this,
declawed, and the chainsaws still have the actual cutting chain on them. So I have to pay attention to those things. And a lot of times people start talking, I just.
So if you're going to come up and talk to Sean, you need to be a danger to him.
You need to find a way to capture my attention. There are quite a few ways to do that. Not all of them are approved for the family-like nature of this show.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're going and have been.
This has been an odd start to the morning meeting this morning, but I think that's only fair since this is a Ben Yount day with Illinois Watchdog.
Oh, yeah.
Benjamin Yount coming up in just a bit. Some of the things that we'll be talking to Ben about, how much of a slap in the face did Democrats take it when at the end of the week last week, Governor Rauner came out and said he would consider personally writing the check to each of them to stay for a special session so they would get the work done and reach a budget agreement. I have a feeling that was not received well by the left. The progressive income tax is back on the table
today
for Illinois today. Even those in sort of tax policy institutes, yes, I know, wonk alert and boring alert, but these things exist. Even some of the progressives in those situations say that the one being proposed by Lou Lang is just a terrible idea.
Really?
So, yes, that he's going too far with the top end of nearly 10%.
Yeah, there are, and this is one of the things I wanted to, we'll get to this with Ben, is if we're going to apply the progressive tax, the graduated tax, how is that a tax cut for 99% of the people? I'm not really sure how the math works there.
Right, and it's something that they haven't bothered to work out. So those are some things we'll be talking to Ben about coming up this morning on the morning meeting. All right, we seem to have had our end-of-show fun right at the beginning. It's kind of like those occasions when you have your dessert first. We'll get into some things to do with Indiana. You got the Hoosier Hoedown going on today.
Mm-hmm.
And have the Democrats, as far as a party, learned a valuable lesson from what they just saw unfold during this Republican primary. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has come out with a new edict for the Democratic Party. We'll talk about how this is largely Republican influence coming up next here on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
The universal consciousness is still in play because while you were screaming John Malkovich at the radio, Quaid and I figured that out as soon as we went to break. So
John Malkovich, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, the universal consciousness still in effect. Good job by sending us those thoughts. It's the morning meeting. Official guest countdown clock coming up is 17 minutes. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us here on the morning meeting. So this morning, the Washington Examiner had a quote from Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz that her preference, and she will be leading the DNC to do this, is to do away with all open primaries for the Democratic Party. She wants the nominee for the party's race for president to be chosen by Democrats alone. And she wishes that Democrats had tighter control of that process.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And now,
this is interesting on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it is. Because I'm trying to think of when you got to go back 8 years before there was, if you want to use the term meddling, with their primary process. Does she feel that there's been meddling this go-round vis-a-vis Bernie?
She went on to say that this is the first time that a progressive leader, she's obviously referencing Bernie Sanders, has come out against this system. Sanders, who currently trails Hillary, he has been running around touting his success in where? States where they've had open primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So when you open this up, here's what I'm seeing on both sides of the aisle. When you have open primaries, it becomes more inclusive, and you have the traditional leadership in both parties decrying what happens when you're more inclusive. You have the rise of Trump in the GOP tent, and you have really an opportunity for backlash against the DNC's chosen knight, Hillary, in this one, because Bernie has done so well in the open primary states. So it's interesting that leadership on both sides seems to regret open primaries.
Well,
I'm fascinated by that.
It is interesting. I mean, obviously, not all states are open primaries, and we've seen it, especially early on in the process when you had caucus states. I think Ted Cruz seemed to do better in caucus states,
mm-hmm.
where there were closed primaries. The race was a little tighter, but yeah, when you had an open primary, Donald Trump tended to do better. If you were just take it back a couple of weeks ago in New York, that was a closed primary, and members of Trump's family couldn't vote for him because they weren't registered Republicans.
You've got that. I mean, it didn't seem to hurt him, though, in New York.
It didn't hurt him.
So this is interesting. I think the only thing this does is alienate the squishy middle. And that's really not a group that anybody's been worried about alienating before. Because if you have that squishy middle that doesn't want to declare for any ideology, or you have someone who is an ideological zealot who doesn't see their ideology represented by either party, they want to sit out and remain either independent or unaffiliated until it's time to vote. And I have no problem with that in a general. But if you're voting in a party's primary, the party, again, has the right to set whatever rules they want to determine their party's representation. You don't have to agree with it. They certainly are going to court your vote in a general. But in a primary leading up to it, there is nothing that says that party leadership has to admit everyone to vote in their process.
Right. You would obviously the parties want you to be able to say, as a voter, that you are on at least a basic level ideologically in simpatico,
mm-hmm.
to what the party
says. You
don't
have to be in lockstep with them,
because obviously there are differences in the primary candidates, but they at least want you to have a like-mindedness when it comes to basic values of that party. And I get that, because if you don't have that, then you are open to, I don't want to say sabotage, but having that primary vote hijacked.
Would Ryan Spreebus or Debbie Wasserman Schultz tell you that their primaries have been sabotaged or hijacked this year?
Obviously, I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz feels, if she doesn't feel that they've been hijacked, there's at least a scent of it, a whiff of it somewhere, and she doesn't like the way it smells.
But, and I will say this, Democrats have gone a long way with their party infrastructure in this process to inoculate themselves against this with their use of superdelegates.
True.
They give themselves
one way
that bit of a pad. Yeah.
To counter it so that you don't look, I mean.
So they can counter the will of the people.
Right. But
I'm just being totally facetious now.
No, for people who don't pay attention, who aren't in this, you know, focused on it day in, day out. A lot of times primaries are just something that happens. People don't bother them. So you talk about the squishy middle. I would tell you that in many cases, those are people who aren't really focused on this on a day-to-day basis. And I think when you talk about the people who are in it on a day-to-day basis within the parties, the people who've taken the time to immerse themselves in it, and then they see, you know, a wave of people show up who don't know issues, who don't know candidates, who may have just glommed on to a headline or two, or all of a sudden a bunch of coverage,
mm-hmm.
And then they're, well, that's the direction I'm going because that's what's right now. I could see where that might be a little unnerving.
Yeah, I can understand that from a party leadership standpoint where you have it really a very important time for your party because the top of the ticket, while it's only one office, it has such a large effect on down ticket candidates at issues. Mm-hmm. You're having that quote unquote hijacked by the 24-hour news cycle a lot of times. If you're registered with one party or the other, they have, not to sound nefarious with my fingers steepled, they have ways to get in touch with you.
Oh,
but
yeah.
they can directly approach you much more easily in an intra-party non-news cycle basis. All the candidates who are running, in that primary for that office. So you have a chance to have a lot more direct contact as a party, as a candidate in that case, and not have your process sort of dictated by that 24-hour news cycle. So from just an organizational standpoint for a party, I'm not surprised that leadership is advocating for closed primaries, but take a step back from trying to make things easy on yourself. And I want you to ask one of your favorite rhetorical questions that you have been running around asking people in various facilities and roles for years.
You're asking me this?
Hopefully you know your line.
What my line, I guess, here is
What
are we building?
Yes. What are we building? I think if you look at it from that standpoint, when you ask yourself, what are we building? What has been the crying point for Republicans? It has been a party that is largely diminishing by headcount. It is a party that has been losing ground as more and more liberal generations are raised each year, each cycle, so to speak, to an open-armed, at least they project that status, DNC. So if you're the Republican Party, what are we building? If you want to close your primaries and you want to keep people out of the process, that's what I would ask the RNC right now. And are the Democrats, is the DNC learning the wrong lesson from the RNC? You know, they say that your enemies have a huge impact on your life because they teach you lessons you need to know. Every time they beat you, they teach you something you need to know. Your friends teach you things you want to know. Your enemies teach you things you need to know.
Mm.
So what impact is this having on the DNC, watching how upset the RNC has been with the rise of Trump in the party, when everybody said at the beginning, he's a showman, he's looking for headlines, he wants a little bit of free press for The Apprentice, and as soon as the actual work comes, not only will he be disinterested, but people will fade, and, you know, he's just the ooh, look, shiny object.
That hasn't happened, and
it looks like he's going to take this thing all the way to Cleveland.
And if you're saying that Debbie Wasserman Schultz fears something like that coming from the other side, the left,
It happened 8 years ago.
They want to have, yeah, in a way. I mean, he came from the elected infrastructure. I mean, mm-hmm. he wasn't a TV persona. However, I mean,
maybe that's just what we feel like on the non-liberal ideology side of the aisle.
Fascinating, because we got into this discussion last night at the Quaid residence. I said,
What is it? The palatial mansion.
The future, I think what has occurred here with Donald Trump is going to be at least attempted to be repeated in the future. I think you're going to see people of somewhat fame who already have a brand out there who think, well, maybe I can blur the lines between Hollywood and
the
Beltway.
You just hit the nail on the head. And where's it going to come from, and what are they going to be? You're talking about narcissistic Hollywood liberals, mm-hmm. who believe that they have something to say, they can speak out about something, because their life of looking into a camera or shouting from a stage has given them popularity and money and fame. They have no idea what to do with it. It's much different to have a pet cause when you're a public personality than it is to be a CEO, a leader, a CEO of a country. And I think this is, and the narcissism well is so deep. You know something's going to bubble up from there. And
right.
I think that's where you're going to see it. And I'm going to want to just gouge my eyes out when it happens.
Exactly. And it's, this is what you're going to get. We've joked. How many times have we made the joke about Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Camacho? And I know I'm forgetting one of the names of there somewhere. But it's a joke from the movie Idiocracy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say, and there are people out there having this discussion right now, they're starting to say, I can do this in 4 years. I can be in that position. There are obvious names of people who have made comments before about wanting to run for office. Alec Baldwin, George Clooney, Ben Affleck. Those are three. I don't know that it would be any of those three. It might be somebody else.
I'm fascinated to know what office they think they would be good for.
You only go to the top. Now, some of them have made discussions about senator, something like that. But I think you talk about narcissism. If I do something and get praise and applause for every time I take a bow, there isn't anything more natural than being president.
You've just breathed it to life. And unfortunately, we could go down the list. Jesse Ventura in Minnesota.
The Rock.
Al Franken in Minnesota. What's wrong with Minnesota? Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, you've got all of these from the... And then you have... And this is the camp, too. I know where Ben Yount is dutifully waiting, and we'll bring him on in a second. But you also have a long history, and it's been ultimately much quieter, I think, because you have most of them came in a different media age, a long crossover of athletes into politics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you think about guys like Dr. Tom Osborne, Steve Largent, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan. You have a long history.
Reagan
had the only thing
acting history
that they
too.
Did, yeah. But you have that long crossover, and maybe I'm overblowing it. You know, maybe they'll all be Reagan coming out of that sort of acting history when they run for politics.
Reagan seasoned himself. He didn't leapfrog the whole, you know, immersing himself in the process and being a part of the whole thing and go right to pray. He got involved at a basic level. You know, worked his way around, became governor, and it wasn't an overnight type of a thing where he went, yes,
I would be much more impressed if somebody...
I can be president. Let's put that on the agenda.
First. Yes, yes. If Ben Affleck went out and did 4 years as a city councilman for his ward to kind of start to understand the process and actually serve a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I'd be much more open, and I'm just using him as generic celebrity personality, than I would be somebody who's, I'm running for president. Get out of here. A guy who's much more qualified than any of them, Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, coming up next on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
Who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Segrist, Quaid alongside you. Our man riding the steel horse now, out and around the doomed state of Illinois.
He's not on the steel horse.
He's not on the steel horse. Ben Yount with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. What are you, just sitting on the back porch where the other phone doesn't get reception?
I've dropped you the past couple of times. I mean, I don't get to those good mother-in-law and grilling jokes, so I want to stay on. I know that Quaid's the thread killer. I don't want to be the phone call killer anymore. I figure we'll give this phone a try.
I just figured you'd finally decided to group us with the mother-in-law. Maybe the smartest move you'd have made the whole time.
When I move and I don't tell her where we're going. Or I give her a fake address. By the way, what's your address there in Quincy?
At the station, 329 Main Street.
All right, we'll tell her to come looking for me there.
Yeah, yeah, you can do that. That's fine. We have a security door on the front. You have to be buzzed in, so we can kind of run that interference for you. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. At the end of the week, last week, I'm going to say this is an interesting proposal. I think that Democrats would consider it a slap in the face. Governor Rauner came out and said he'd be willing to pay the cost of each legislator if they came to a special session to reach a budget agreement. Now, this sounds like bridge building by the governor on its face, but I would assume, Ben, that several Democrats, if not all of them, were rather perturbed by this statement from the governor.
Well, this takes away the threat, because here we are, we're in May, we're the 3rd of May, and we're absolutely no closer to anything than we were, you know, the 3rd of January. We're not any closer on a budget or a deal to pay for schools or pensions or any of this. So the threat, the weapon, right, that Democrats can say, well, if you don't agree to a tax hike, we're going to take this into the summer, and then it's $40,000 a day. You know, how many times did we write that story when it was Pat Quinn and when it was Rob Blagojevich? I mean, you know, it's this a teacher's salary a day. And so now the governor, because this is what happens when you have FU money, he says, okay, let's go. I'll pay it. What's it going to cost? You know, a couple hundred thousand dollars? Fine. I'll write that check tomorrow. And it takes away this threat of June. Now, I don't know how successful a special session would be. We saw this all last year where they sat around and they didn't have anything. But this is not so much an olive branch or a negotiating tool as it is the governor understanding, all right, if we figure this out, we're going to figure it out at the end of June, and it's going to take some overtime. Now, I'm not going to let the Democrats beat me and blame me for this. I'll offer to pay. Most likely, we're all not going to be in Springfield all June anyway, but this is more a PR move and a pretty solid one at that than an actual olive branch to try and make peace. Because, again, this is all Madigan, Cullerton, Rahner, Redonio, and Durkin, and everybody else doesn't matter, at least not at this point.
Yeah, in business, you want to make sure that you get a product for your money, so it seems real easy. Make the offer just COD, cash on delivery of a budget,
everything
would seem to work out. Ben, you out in Illinois Watchdog with us this morning on the morning meeting.
Okay, graduated income tax being wrangled, I guess, this morning. In Springfield, more likely that we'll get to a budget by summertime if they somehow decide that graduated income tax is the way to go?
You got two different things. This week is the week for the constitutional amendment that would allow for graduated income tax. And this is sort of what's the benefit of not having a lot of people in Springfield anymore is the nuance gets lost. First thing that has to happen, the House this week has to find 71 votes, which means Republicans, to vote for the ability to create a constitutional or to create a graduated income tax. Then after that happens, Liu Lang's actual legislation, which could take the top rates to almost 11%, would then have to pass. This is a two- or three-step process. So when Democrats hear, graduated income tax the rich, yeah! They get all fired up, but this is step one of 400, and there's a lot that has to happen in between. Now, are we going to get a budget with a graduated income tax? I don't think we're going to get a graduated income tax. I just don't see that. Are we going to get some tax increase? Maybe. Civic Federation's out today with a report. They've got 9 recommendations on how to fix the state's budget. 7 of them are tax increases. 2 of them are spending cuts. When given the choice, would you rather pay tax on a haircut or a game of bowling, you know, expand the sales tax, or pay 11% of your income to the state of Illinois for no foreseeable fix? That's the debate. So, yeah, are we likely going to get a tax increase? We very well could. Is it going to be a graduated income tax increase? I wouldn't put my money on it, but then again, I don't know. I don't know at this point if anybody can predict what's going to happen. But, yeah, two steps, and both of them are very large for this graduated income tax.
Well, Ben, my fear is that they're going to do both. I'm going to be paying 11%, and I'm going to be paying a tax on that game of bowling after my sweet haircut.
Well, this is the problem. You don't give a heroin addict more heroin. You don't give me a keg of beer and a day off. You just don't do those things. You don't give the state of Illinois more money. We did this under Pat Quinn. Took $36 billion of our money over 4 years, and what did he do with it? Now, supporters will rightly point out Pat Quinn paid down the pension payment. But critics will point down Pat Quinn paid down the pensions. He didn't fix roads. He didn't fix the state. Maybe the backlog of unpaid bills was slightly less. But again, you and I and everybody in this state gave up a week's worth of pay so that a retired master sergeant didn't have to hear the word no, that a retired superintendent could count on that six-figure pension. Again, the frustration is not that we have to pay taxes. I don't think the people in Illinois are anarchists. The problem is that every time we turn around, we are told we have to pay more for government. If I was paying more and getting better streets, if I was paying more and the bridge didn't fall underwater every time we got a rainstorm headed to West Quincy, okay, but that's not what we're paying for. And even when you look at the city of Quincy, hey, great, we've got a budget. We're going to open a fire station. We're going to have to raise taxes to hire the firefighters. I mean, again, this gets to the point of we're paying more and more and more. We're not getting anything for it. The people who work for government are, but the people who pay for government, not so much.
Just want to go ahead and baseline this out if you haven't been keeping up to speed with exactly what we're talking about. Illinois is one of just 8 states that have a flat income tax, all right? Right now, we all pay 3.75%. 43 states collect income tax. That means 7 don't, so they already have a different setup than the ones that do. But Lou Lang's bill, he's a Democrat out of Skokie, it would raise the top rate so high. He says 9.75. Ben, you've said it actually rolls closer to 11%. That top end is so high that senior directors at tax policy centers across the nation, yeah, I mentioned this in the intro to the show today, these things do exist. Go ahead and wake yourself up right now, have come out and said, this is we're Icarus right now. We're treading too close to the sun. 11%, 10%, way too high. This isn't going to work. And these are people who sit around and find ways to tax people.
Yeah. When you have the tax hike supporters, the chorus, the true believers saying, yeah, tax the rich. Ooh, man, I don't know. Illinois, you're going to tax those people to death. You know something's wrong. And before you light up the phone lines and yell at me for being, you know, part of the 1%, I will invite you to come and look at the half gallon of milk that I have till payday in my fridge. But I will point out that it doesn't take a lot to become a top earner mm-hmm. under Lang's plan. You're talking people who $500,000 to $1 million, and I know that you know, us guys in radio, that's weekend cash, man. I mean, that's what we pay at the buffet. But it is what a small dry cleaner or a moderately successful lawn care business is. And this is the problem. It's not that, you know, the hedge fund managers and the bond guys in Chicago, the Pritzkers aren't going to be able to afford this. They're going to be fine. It is the million-dollar dry cleaner who files, you know, his taxes go through his personal account. Now, all of a sudden, he's paying 11% to the government, plus all of the other fees. This is the sort of job-killing tax that really is going to expedite this. Listen, WalletHub is out with a new study today, writing this story as soon as we hang up, that Illinois has 2 cities on the top 150 to start a business, Chicago and Aurora. But they are ranked like 70 and 100. And St. Louis is 5. Springfield, Missouri is like 8. I want to say someplace in Michigan, Grand Rapids maybe, is 3. When you look around all of our neighbors, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, for God's sakes, Michigan, they all have 2, 3, 4, 5 cities, and they're all in the top 50. Texas, Dallas, there are 7 communities in the Dallas metro area alone that make the list. When you look at why it is that State Farm is growing in Richardson, Texas, and not in Bloomington, Illinois, its home, it is because of stuff like this. Businesses and business people aren't stupid. If you're telling them you're going to take 11 cents on the dollar, they're going to go to a place that doesn't. Because you know who's one of those states that doesn't have an income tax? Texas.
Yep.
Ben Yount, our guest this morning on the morning meeting. But Ben, what you're hearing out there this morning, I don't know if this is a direct quote from Lou Lang or not, but this graduated income tax will equal a tax cut for 99% of Illinoisans. I'm bad at the math, but that sounds worse than me. How does that work?
Well, first of all, always remember that 47% of the people in this country don't pay taxes. We give the government a 0% interest loan, and they eventually kind of sort of, once they pay off the IOUs, give it back to us. There are a lot of people who will pay less on this, but how much less? And how much less to offset what is being paid? Listen, how many times have you heard this story? Because I've lived this a couple of times, and I hear this on my radio show all the time. Ben, I did what I thought was right. I went and I got a second job. My wife worked hard and got a promotion, and we earned $25,000 more last year, but that bumped us up in a tax bracket, and we ended up paying $10,000 of that straight to the government. This is the problem. That, okay, 99% of the people in the state, to just let's stipulate Liu Lang's rhetoric here. Am I going to get a 1% increase or decrease? Am I going to get a 10% decrease? What's this going to do when I fall off that cliff? So how much more am I going to pay when I make $200,000 than if I made $150,000? What's this going to do, again, to all those small businesses that, yeah, you can say 99% of the people are going to see a cut, and if you see a dollar less, that's a cut. But don't kid yourself. They are not passing this. They're not talking about this graduated income tax as a way to reduce tax rates. This is, as a net, it is a $2 billion tax increase. That money is going to come from someone. And okay, if the 1% is going to be charged $2 billion, what's going to happen to those 1%? And when you realize that I'm not out there hiring people, middle class Benyant is not hiring people. It is the people who own businesses, who have the kind of money to hire these folks. Now you start to see the problem. It's, you know, $15 an hour as a minimum wage sounds great until you realize that one in three workers is going to be fired and the other one is only going to work 10 hours a week. It sounds like a great idea when you talk about all this income inequality nonsense, but when you actually understand what it's going to do, it's a terrible idea, not just for the people who will pay, but for the people who are supposed to be getting something out of it. It is a $2 billion tax increase, no matter what numbers you use.
Ben Yount with us this morning on the morning meeting. All right, Ben, Sean and I yesterday talked about Puerto Rico being upside down and why that merits watching. Do you think the people in Springfield are watching what the federal government is doing with Puerto Rico, with perhaps designs on the future?
There are two crowds in Springfield watching Puerto Rico. There are people who are watching Puerto Rico with their sort of fingers over their eyes, almost like they're watching a horror movie. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Because Puerto Rico is about to become insolvent. It is the buzzword for fiscal mismanagement. And they're in the tank, I want to say something, maybe at the high end 70, if not 40. I can't remember exactly what the price tag is. But it's in the tens of millions of dollars. Illinois is upside down, $130 billion alone on pensions. And so while you have half the state sitting here saying, oh my God, we are headed for Puerto Rico. We, the state of Illinois, are twice as bad as Puerto Rico. And you hear all of this doom and gloom of Puerto Rico. Oh my, what are we going to do? You have a whole half the other crowd saying, oh man, this is great. the federal government's going to come in and they're going to bail out Puerto Rico and then they're going to bail out us and we can spend. And that's the problem is that two people can look at the exact same set of facts and come with two different conclusions. You have people who believe in big government looking at Puerto Rico and what the federal government is going to do. And they are licking their lips because if the federal government goes and saves Puerto Rico, well, then why wouldn't the federal government come and save Illinois and Rhode Island and Kentucky and California and all of these other states that are upside down on their pensions? And the reality is we shouldn't be doing either. Taxpayers shouldn't be going and bailing out yet another failed system. Bad politicians. Again, listen, if the Supreme Court says on Obamacare, it's not our job to save you from the bad political decisions you made. Someone needs to do the same for Puerto Rico and Illinois and Rhode Island and Kentucky and California. Bad political decisions should not be pushed on to paid for by all of the taxpayers in this country. And that's why people are watching Puerto Rico down here in Illinois.
Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Real quick, Ben, Liu Lang has come out. He's the guy with the graduated income tax policy, the Democrat from Skokie. He has come out and said, yep, we know we're going to need a couple Republicans to cross the aisle. By my math, that would be three. Four or five would make it comfortable. Are there three to four to five Illinois Republicans who are going to cross the aisle on this bill?
I don't know. I think that there's a better chance now because Sam McCann won his primary race, but you got to understand this is a big vote. And if Governor Rauner can pay $40,000 a day to make sure that lawmakers are in session over the summer, imagine what he can do to fund someone's political opponent. And that's what it comes down to. Plus, okay, so you've got to take two votes on this graduated income tax. Again, a vote this week to clear the way so the amendment can be on the ballot. Then there will be some time and a vote for Lou Lang's specific plan. You're counting on every single Democrat, save one or two, to vote for the idea both times. And while you may have some Democrats who, exactly like the tax federations, say, okay, I like the idea of a graduated income tax, just not this one, there are going to be a lot of Republicans. Because the biggest sin you can commit in Springfield is to vote for something that doesn't matter, to go on the record and lose. It is better to not vote than to vote on the wrong side of a losing issue, and that's the biggest hurdle. It may not even be, you know, the policy. It is the actual politics and the procedure of this thing that I think is going to doom Lang's. Again, two votes, one this week and then one to follow. Mm-hmm. They both have to pass in order for there to be any chance of a graduated income tax, and it's really tough to pass two close votes, particularly this year.
Lightning round, two horse races for you to pick today. First one in Indiana. How do you see that breaking down?
I see Trump winning. I see Trump winning, and I think that this may be it. I think we're going to have a conversation tomorrow. All right, conservatives, what do you do? How do you go forward from this? The other one.
The other one is the Derby on Saturday. Who you got?
Who's running? Is Secretary still running? Because I'll put my money on that guy.
I figured you'd be our horse racing guy. I don't know why I had you penciled in for that.
It's going to be sunny with a chance of pulled pork and Bud Light. So that's my Derby prediction.
Saturday's Ben's day off. That's when he gets the keg of beer. That's why you never hear anything on Sunday. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog. Thanks for the time,
thanks,
bud.
Ben.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Boys, we'll see you next week.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Segrest, Quaid alongside you. You know, I'm not going to give away your genius suggestion, but if you want to run it through legal, we'll have that opportunity tomorrow. Travis Aiken joins us. He's going to be a semi-regular participant here on the show. It's going to be great to have a guy with a legal background who is active in conservative politics joining us every other Wednesday here now on the morning meeting. That begins tomorrow. You know him from iLaw, Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch, and he might be adding some other honorariums to that as well. I don't want to spoil the plans that he's up to.
He's a busy guy.
But he has been asked to join a couple of other enterprises as well.
I also want to ask him about the frivolous lawsuit against Starbucks that has been put in place here in the land of Lincoln.
I'm
surprised that didn't happen in Madison County.
There was not enough coffee in the iced coffee. There was too much ice.
Too much ice. Not
lawsuit. You want to talk about frivolous. Oh, my God. That's just... there should be sort of an automatic a countersuit that jumps in and just you know, it takes time and resources from the people who are using the courts so frivolously that they're taking away from other important issues.
Yeah, the logic, of course, being you don't have to buy your iced coffee beverage from that.
You can literally be judge, jury, and executioner for that business by voting with your wallet and going somewhere else.
Used to be the way we did things in this country.
Well, we'll see. We'll talk to Travis about that tomorrow. Whole bunch of things coming up tomorrow on the morning meeting.
Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.